souhaite rien, ni le bien.
Hi, this is Robert Scheer with another edition of Scheer Intelligence, where the intelligence comes from my guest, in this case, Tariq Ali, a well-known British journalist born in Pakistan, educated, I think, largely in England, and who has written incredibly important books and analysis of U.S. foreign policy, generally critical of the tendency towards empire. And the reason for this interview is he's assembled, along with Margaret Kunstler, a really important book. It's called In Defense of Julian Assange, and it's scores of people writing about different aspects of the case of Julian Assange. Now, one reason I do these podcasts is it compels me to read a book that I might otherwise have skimmed, and that's certainly the case of this book. It's our publisher. And in defense of Julian Assange, I thought I knew a lot about this case. And I was surprised in reading this book that I fell for some of the traps set by the mass media and by the governments, the U.S. government, the Swedish government, the Ecuadorian government of late, and the British government, certainly, where Julian Assange is being held as a prisoner. I must say, much to my shame, had I not read this book carefully, I was falling for some of the personal attacks and attempts to dismiss the significance of Julian Assange. Having read the book, and I think it's 454, almost 500 pages, I was rewarded with an understanding, a very clear understanding, that Julian Assange is truly one of the most important journalists of the last 50 years. And I say this having been an active journalist, as Tariq has, and thought I knew quite a bit. But when I went through really what WikiLeaks revealed and the universality of their concerns, including, by the way, documents unflattering for Putin's Russia, since that's at the key of the drama now, what was WikiLeaks' connection with Russia. But, you know, throughout the world. And the very idea, I ended up sort of in a rage at the end of this, thinking, how dare anyone challenge the Julian Assange's role as a journalist? You don't have to agree that he's your kind of journalist, but the idea that he is a journalist deserving of press freedom acknowledgement, which is, you know, the whole attempt to, you know, justify his being held under the most brutal conditions in England, that to my mind is the value of your collection. I defy anyone to spend even a few hours with this collection and have any doubts as to the significance of Julian Assange as a practicing journalist, as a publisher, deserving, as even lawyers who've worked for the New York Times recognize, the same consideration that the Washington Post or the New York Times have when they published the Pentagon Papers, when they published other information uncomfortable to the U.S. Government on national security terms and so forth. And as they warned, some of these lawyers most effectively who represented the New York Times, that if you can get these charges that are filed against Julian Assange right now by the U.S. government, basically concerned the normal practices of journalists dealing with the national security state. And take it from there. I mean, but I think that is the power of this collection that you have assembled.
Well, thanks, Bob. I mean, it's very good, especially as it comes from someone like you who knows what investigative journalism is. It's a sort of dying cause now, and very little of it goes on. But precisely what we did in assembling In Defense of Julian Assange was to take every single facet of the case and present it before a reading public. And one reason we had to do this is because the press had given up on him, having used WikiLeaks, having got their scoops, having raised their own circulations, the liberal press, The Guardian and The New York Times, and others. In Europe, it was El País, actually, to its credit, which carried on supporting Assange. The others fell a bit silent. and hoped that the case would go away instead of defending him, because in defending him, as the Guardian has now recognized, they're defending themselves. If Julian is found guilty of these absurd charges that are being laid against him of espionage, etc., then the same applies to the editor of the New York Times and the editor of the Guardian who published these things. Why aren't they being tried? And the reason they're not being tried is because that would be going too far and would raise a storm. And we did this. We put this collection together precisely to raise a storm, saying Julian is not the editor of a mainstream liberal newspaper in the Western world, but he is the editor and has been of WikiLeaks, which has done an amazing job. You're absolutely right. There's been nothing like it over the last 50 years. Obviously, there's been whistleblowers and some famous ones, the Pentagon Papers, you know, in the Vietnam days.
By the way, Daniel Ellsberg has been very clear, because nowadays, you know, he's the favorite whistleblower for many establishment and particularly Democratic Party people. You know, they say, well, Daniel Ellsberg, but at the time I happened to be at his trial. I was then editing Ramparts, which had published quite a few whistleblowers. And at that trial, Daniel Ellsberg was facing, you know, 125 years in jail, facing the same espionage charge, which was only at that point had been used in, I think, three cases. It was Barack Obama who brought, you know, I think 11 cases under the Espionage Act, you know, revived this 1917 legislation, which really had nothing to do with this sort of issue. It was giving secrets, military secrets, to a real enemy that you would recognize. But in this case, you know, what is so appalling is that, and I want you to discuss the range of your book, because, you know, people are dismissing Julian Assange or are hostile to him, as many Democratic politicians, they call him, you know, you can't call him a traitor since he's not an American citizen, but they're really hostile because he inconvenienced or harmed Hillary Clinton's campaign for president, which, after all, has never been the standard of judging the value of journalism. I mean, Daniel Ellsberg harmed Richard Nixon's re-election campaign with the revelations of the Pentagon Paper. Big deal. You know, that's not the test of journalism, whether it's inconvenient. But the fact is, and discuss the charges against Julian Assange, they predate anything to do with telling us what was in Hillary Clinton's speeches to Goldman Sachs and others, or what was in the Podesta files about undermining Bernie Sanders' campaign. This all relates, these charges, to journalism that he did in 2010. Correct me if I'm wrong. And why don't you tell us the kind of journalism, the range, the scope, you know, of powerful people been disturbed by this, which does range from Russia to the U.S., which stops along the way in Africa and the Mideast, and actually credit for fueling the Arab Spring reprisal against the Mideast dictators.
Well, exactly, Bob. I mean, the range of Assange's journalism and publishing activities is quite unique in this world. The scale of it is pretty amazing. Every continent covered, every report WikiLeaks considered was important, published from Iraq. I mean, one of the things they did in the case of Iraq, which enraged the Pentagon and the Defense Intelligence Agency, was to release a video, a very, very notorious video now. It's on YouTube. People can watch it, of a helicopter gunship killing innocent Iraqis for no bloody rhyme or reason. I mean, just killing them, celebrating their murder, saying we got them, as if they were playing a video game.
One little detail. One was a child, and the pilots actually made a joke about it. Who told them to bring their child along to such an event, you know? I mean, it was, the cynicism was ghoulish. It was creepy.
Right.
And yet, those pilots and the people who ordered them into this kind of activity, they're not condemned. They're not judged. Yeah. Julian Assange is sitting in jail. So is, by the way, we should mention, Chelsea Manning was a lower-level U.S. Military person who had access to this and released it because this was evidence of serious war crime. And if you take the Nuremberg principle, which the U.S. held up for the whole world, you're not supposed to sit by when you're witnessing a war crime. And there was no question, serious war crime. And Bradley Manning should have been rewarded with some kind of Medal of Freedom or something. Instead, is now in jail. Let's cut to the chase here. Bradley Manning, now Chelsea Manning, is in prison. Why? Because they want to break her to testify against Julian Assange that somehow he was complicit. So he's not just a publisher. He's actually an activist or something. The same way Daniel Ellsberg. Daniel Ellsberg was not a publisher. Daniel Ellsberg was in the position that Chelsea Manning is in, seeing evidence of war crimes and releasing them as a whistleblower. Julian Assange, as you pointed out, is in the position of the New York Times and the Washington Post that published the Pentagon Papers.
We live in a very debased world now, Bob, where double standards have prevailed for so long that very few citizens actually recognize what a norm is or how people should behave. They've been swept into this mainstream media bubble. And they, you know, when the WikiLeaks papers were published by all these journalists, their readers were applauding them for doing it. But then memories are short.
Time for a break, and we'll be back in a few minutes. We're back with Sheer Intelligence and our guest. I also want to make one critical point here, which your book is a collection of essays by really quite authoritative voices, and it does range through all of the character assassination against Julian Assange, and it dissects it, and it's important for that reason. Yes, and the character assassination, by the way, I didn't mean to dismiss it. It's quite effective. It's why Julian Assange is not getting the support he deserves from the very news organizations that publish the information he revealed. They're in this incredibly hypocritical position of saying he's not a journalist, but they won prizes publishing the material that he gave them. That's called journalism, okay? They endorsed his journalism by reprinting it all over the world, the most famous publications. But character assassination of a whistleblower is not new. It's the norm. And Daniel Ellsberg experienced it. Let me just make that point because, again, I was at that trial. And I've known Daniel for all these years. I admire him enormously. But he was the victim of very similar character assassination about his personal life and everything. And indeed, Watergate came unglued over the revelation. It started that these same Watergate people had broken into Daniel Ellsberg's psychologist's office in Beverly Hills to get negative material about Daniel's personal life. That was the whole preceded Watergate, the break-in of his house. Why were they there? Because they were out to smear Daniel Ellsberg and saying, oh, he's not really a serious person concerned about issues. He's some kind of degenerate. And they do that with every whistleblower. They manage to effectively destroy their lives. They deny them their pensions. And they always try to break the whistleblowers. And in this case, Julian Assange is not the whistleblower. He is the publisher, very much like, exactly like the New York Times or the Washington Post, that is printing someone else's story. Now, let's talk about the U.S. charges against them. The reason some in the media are now changing their editorial tone is because the charges go to the very idea of investigative journalism. They say if you take any material that has been called classified on some level, and by the way, the material that Julian Assange revealed was a low level of classification, should be pointed out. But the fact of the matter is, that every newspaper that publishes stories on the national security state and what the military does, are they printing material that generally have a higher level of classification than that revealed by Julian Assange. So it finally dawned on the editorial board of the New York Times, which first had attacked Julian Assange and the Washington Post, that, wait a minute, this is setting a very dangerous precedent, because what Julian Assange didn't do anything different than what the New York Times did.
Well, this is absolutely correct. I mean, it's the same here. The Guardian, which had ignored Julian for some years and not been supportive, has was forced to write an editorial in which they said that the more or less what you're saying in a milder way, but and said that under no circumstances should he be extradited to the United States. So they have come clean. And the last time I met Julian, just before he was transferred to Belmarsh Prison, when we were about to commence work on the book, I went to see him to make sure he was okay with the idea of doing a book like this. And he was naturally very happy and pleased, since support for him had ebbed away. I said, Julian, tell me honestly, do you have any hope? And he said, in the judicial system of the West, no. But my one hope is that Jeremy Corbyn is elected and is in Downing Street. That is the only hope I have. And of course, the Labour front benchers in Parliament have defended Julian very strongly. Both Jeremy Corbyn, the leader of the Labour Party, and his shadow Home Secretary, the woman who would be the Home Secretary if Corbyn won, Diane Abbott, made it very clear that they don't accept these charges, that what Julian is really being charged for is exposing murder and war crimes in a number of countries which have been invaded, etc. So the other point, Bob, which is, I think, worth stressing, is that however much they use debased stuff to try and discredit Ellsberg, as you point out, which I have a vague memory of, and more recently, Julian Assange.
By the way, Ellsberg.
It doesn't work, because sooner or later, someone else, someone decent, watching a war crime being committed, will do the same thing. They will not remember these things of what is done to X or Y, or won't let it influence them, and will reveal them. And the big difference between the Ellsberg phase and the world today is that the access to the web, the existence of the web, does make a huge difference. And the stuff can be transmitted, published very quickly without even appearing in a mainstream paper. So I think in a way, and they probably know it, which is why the stakes are so high, they're fighting a losing battle.
Well, except, have you read your Orwell lately?
Course be a question of making democracy purely a ritual.
Well, let me just jump in on this thing with Ellsberg, because I think it's important. The reason Daniel Ellsberg, and I've done a podcast with him, but I also know him quite well, the reason he speaks out so strongly is he knows, he felt the lash of this kind of character assassination, dismissal. Here was a guy who had been a Marine. He supported the war. He worked for the Pentagon. He was one of the, you know, real top bright guys. And then he realized he had been lied to, and he was revealed this history, which is what the Pentagon Papers showed, that the whole effort was a tissue of lies, and that they knew it in real time, the top people, McNamara and Johnson, and then others. And what is at issue here really is political convenience and opportunism and power taking over logic, fact, decency, morality. That's really what's going on. And the power of your collection here, and by the way, OR Books, I guess, is a smaller publisher, but people, thanks again to the internet, yes, they can go online and get this book in Kindle form or find some independent bookstore or get it through Amazon or what have you, so they can have this book within 15 minutes of hearing this podcast. And I would really recommend it, because you may think you know a lot about this case. And every aspect is dealt with, every single aspect, the indictment, the charges in Sweden, the slander, everything is dealt with. And I think in a ruthlessly honest way, by the way, ruthlessly honest, and yet at the heart of it is this is a question of press freedom and the fright of citizens to know the truth. That is the issue. And you have really not talked about the range of Julian's work. So I want to make that point. I was unaware of the, the attack on Julian, which should be irrelevant anyway, is to say, oh, he's got an axe to grind against the U.S. government or so forth. Okay, even if that were true, shooting the messenger, the publisher of information, which is what Nixon did to Ellsberg, by the way, challenge him, character assassination and so forth, weakening American security and all that. But the reality is that Julian Assange was an equal opportunity exposer of crimes. And he did so with dictators in Africa and the Middle East. He released a lot of information that was very inconvenient to Putin's government in Russia. And your book makes very clear in a number of these really detailed and important articles on every level, including from Women Against Rape and so forth, who attacked that whole canard against him, that in fact, the media has distorted this case. And until it realized that they were going to be the next target, were quite willing to have Julian Assange destroyed. That is the ugly truth here, that here you have a guy who performed incredibly valuable journalism and, as I say, equal opportunity in making powerful people around the world uncomfortable, given a lot of credit for the Arab Spring, for example. And yet there's a failure to support him. And particularly I'm part of the liberal, so-called liberal or neoliberal community in the United States. I can tell you, I'm doing this from a university campus, the University of Southern California. I have colleagues here who have told me I don't give a rat's ass about Julian Assange. They don't care about him anymore, even though they may be journalism professors or what have you. It is appalling. And why? Because they're saying if the information that came out was valuable, but an inconvenience. And let's cut to the chase here, even though it's not the basis of the charges against him. What is the big crime that he released this information? And let's end on this. In your book, there are a lot of people who say, wait a minute, the Russian connection. There's no evidence for a Russian connection, which, by the way, even if there was, if the information is information that should be out there, that should be the standard. But in your book, there's really detailed discussion of the whole case here that is motivating a lot of liberal people that somehow he came down on the side of Trump. Where, on the contrary, first of all, the information that was revealed, we had a right to have. What did Hillary Clinton say in those speeches to Goldman Sachs? Which was basically, she's going to take these same bankers who caused the Great Recession with her back to Washington. And also the evidence in the Podesta emails of the Democratic National Committee undermining Bernie Sanders' campaign. Nobody ever talks about what was the information revealed. But they talk about where did it come from. But in your book, there's a pretty strong case made that the Russia connection is highly dubious.
Well, it is very dubious. And, Julian Assange has denied it to me personally and to lots of other people. But he's not being taken seriously because it doesn't fit in with the liberal attack on Julian Assange. I mean, there are U.S. Democrat senators, Bob. Senator Joe Manchin, for instance, who declared, and I just want to read out what this Democrat senator said, it will be really good to get him back on United States soil. He is our property, and we can get the facts and the truth from him. I mean, it's just disgusting.
How does he get to, by the way, how does he get to be their property?
Exactly.
That's like kidnapping, because he's not even not a U.S. citizen.
No, it's sort of, it's the use of gangster language, actually, both in relation to him and others, which has now got so common. And if, you know, if Americans want to know the honest truth, which many of them know, that the people who put Trump into power, I'm afraid, are Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama and their failures. That's what put Trump into power, not the leaking of documents, which just simply tell the truth. I mean, why should these documents be hidden from the U.S. public? The way the United States functions now, and many European countries as well, is that there are certain things which the public should be kept from the public. It's as if citizens were children, and as parents used to say, not in front of the children. And that is how they treat their own citizens. They don't want them to know. But it's very difficult now to push this through and carry on behaving as they were decades ago because of the web and the internet. A lot of rubbish and lies are published on the web too. But it's incredibly useful when it comes to revealing information. And this hatred for him professed by Clinton supporters, don't challenge what Clinton herself was doing. It was Goldman Sachs, it was the coup in Honduras, etc., etc. How the hell does that help the Russians in particular? I don't even understand. And in any event, any newspaper, serious newspaper, with serious editors, and they're very few now, I agree, when handed a piece of information, and after they've convinced themselves that this piece of information is actually accurate, they never release, or they shouldn't release, the name of the source. I mean, that is a golden rule of investigative journalism. If you are convinced by your source, I mean, Cy Hirsch does it all the time. Publishes facts about massacres, war crimes all over the world. He carries on doing this. He will not reveal his source. He will say it was someone in intelligence. He will not go beyond that. Does that disqualify the information? I don't think so. If the journalist in question, whether it's Cy Hirsch or Julian Assange, is proved right. But Cy Hirsch isn't in prison, fortunately. Julian Assange is. And I think American journalism departments and American journalists, people who actually believe in the ideology that the press should be free and not like, as they say, constantly in Putin's Russia, they should do something about it. It's time to take a stand on Julian, whatever you may think of his personal character. Or his personal habits, utterly irrelevant in this case. It's the role he plays, the role he occupies, and why he is getting support from all of us. But we're not enough to try and stop the extradition. And here the plans are being made for a big demonstration when the court trial begins in February, which could go on for some time. Unless there's a Labour government, in which case the charges, they might find a way to challenge the extradition.
Let me wrap this up by saying there's a human drama here that is appalling. And we've talked a lot about Julian Assange, but the real victim here is Chelsea Manning. And here is an incredibly heroic figure, not some originally some famous person, not some highly educated person, not some, you know, person who could articulate a great deal about a lot of things, sitting there as a low-ranking Army personnel person with access to this data and says, my God, this stuff is horrible. My God, I just saw a video where, and I'm, you know, I'm putting words in her and his mouth then, and Bradley Manning. But, you know, my sense of it is this is a person looking at video and saying they're killing children, they're killing innocent people, and they're laughing about it. They are monsters. Our own troops, my colleagues, are acting as monsters. I have an obligation to get this out there. And let's be clear about one thing that your book that you edited makes very clear. Bradley Manning did not take this material originally to Julian Assange. Bradley Manning took this material originally, tried to get the Washington Post, the New York Times, and others to print it. They were not interested, as I understand. And in the telling of the story in this book, in defense of Julian Assange, he becomes the publisher of Last Resort. He's the one that has the courage to reveal war crimes, which you would think would be the obligation of any publisher.
Yeah, and then having done it, these newspapers, which refused to touch the material when it was provided directly to them by Manning, are only too happy to use a third party, a mediator, who's taken the risks, done everything, and then they can publish it. I mean, that itself is a sad commentary, Bob, on the state of mainstream journalism today. I mean, it just is atrocious.
Well, let's really nail that one down, and there's a side issue connected with it, because first of all, you've written a lot about foreign policy and about communism and everything else. And in fact, there's a very interesting essay in your collection. I forget who wrote it, but really this debate between Russia and the United States is not a debate between communism and capitalism. It's a debate between the 1% in Russia and post-communist Russia, capitalist Russia, the 1% against the 1% in the U.S., fighting over leverage. And we have red baiting without reds. I mean, Putin was elected, Putin was working for the American selected leader of Russia, and he was the candidate against the communists, and he was picked when Boris Yeltsin was hopelessly drunk. Putin was the one that Yeltsin turned to be the candidate in that 2000 election against the communists. But we have red baiting without reds. We have red baiting against a rival cartel economy. And the irony here is that the principle that should be driving everyone is freedom of information, right? The freedom, the right of the public to know. And no one can question that Julian Assange did more than any other single publisher that I know of. After all, the New York Times spread misinformation about the Gulf War. The New York Times spread misinformation about the Vietnam War. I mean, these other publishers don't have these spotless records after all, you know. But the irony here is that the character assassination against Julian Assange is used to disparage the importance of his journalism, and the journalism is unquestionably excellent journalism. You know, if you want to talk about fake news, if it had been fake speeches that Hillary Clinton gave to Goldman Sachs, you say, wait a minute, this guy fabricated, or those were fake videos of U.S. troops shooting innocent civilians. But no one has questioned the veracity. In fact, they have actually accused Julian of releasing too much of the information, because in the early release, there were names and so forth. And they wanted him, as most journalists of the establishment do, to redact it so you don't get into these security issues. And then Julian Assange and WikiLeaks perform differently. But the fact of the matter is, no one has questioned the veracity of the information or said it was cherry-picked or distorted or anything else. The mainstream media made a living off this information from this publisher when they themselves didn't have the guts to run it, and then they turned on him. That's the reality. And the crucifixion of Julian Assange, which is really what's going on, because if the man is driven mad, if he's destroyed, and as I say, even more so, we haven't spent time, because this book is not called In Defense of Chelsea Manning. But for my money, the real hero here is Chelsea Manning. This is the person that is now sacrificing her freedom. So she, instead of just turning on Julian Assange, if she had turned on Julian Assange, she'd be a hero to the very people in the Democratic Party who are now, you know, trying to crucify Julian Assange. So Chelsea Manning has shown from beginning to end an incredible courage. I don't know if we've ever had a more courageous person on the side of freedom of information than Chelsea Manning. And I don't want that lost in this podcast, because that's the thought I had in reading this book. Their effort now to get Julian Assange really depends on breaking Chelsea Manning, who, as we speak, is in prison.
I couldn't agree more, Bob. I mean, what Chelsea, then Bradley Manning, did as a very junior operative in signals in the U.S. military intelligence, working for the U.S. Army, took hell of a lot of guts and courage. And one can only imagine the impact, watching these crimes being committed day in and day out, and finally watching things he just, at that time, he couldn't simply accept anymore. That is when he broke, if you like, from the system and its pattern of lies and evasions and cover-ups, and came out, and then was locked up, kept in horrible conditions in the United States, finally released. The one useful, decent, halfway decent thing Obama did, and then captured again, let's not say arrested, captured by the U.S. judicial system and told to testify against Julian. And if she did so, obviously she'd have been a heroine. But, you know, she's kept very strong, I mean, very, very strong faith in what she did and in what he did. And it is to their enormous credit that we are where we are in our knowledge of what happened in the case, particularly of war crimes in Iraq. No doubt in 25 years' time, everyone will be saying it like they never believed us when we said it about Vietnam till My Lai erupted. Then they said the My Lai massacre was just, a bad thing. It wasn't like that, but we now know it was like that. And this wasn't the only massacre that was carried out. And so Julian has reminded us of all that history and the publication of U.S. diplomatic documents. Now, the irony here is, Bob, which we should just register, is that some of the stuff being sent by American embassies secretly in classified encryptions back to D.C., and the State Department contains some very useful information from some intelligent U.S. diplomats contradicting the public stuff the politicians were coming up with and giving an account privately or in private documents of what was actually going on in the country they were based in. I mean, very useful stuff for any investigative journalist. So even on that level, they shouldn't have been victimizing him, and your later Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, saying that he's running a privatized intelligence agency. Now, yeah. Think about that. What the hell is a privatized intelligence agency?
I'll tell you what it is, and we're going to close with this. Everyone likes a whistleblower as long as he's blowing the whistle on their opponent or in some other regime or so forth. And you know, Donald Trump, I don't know why I'm laughing, but it's such a bizarre situation. At one point, praised Julian Assange because he's taking on the Democrats. And now, of course, he's the man that's going to kill Julian Assange one way or another, drive him mad, try to drag him to a maximum security prison in the United States and throw away the key until the guy is blithering idiot. And that's what it's all about. But that's all the hypocrisy we can explore in this limited time. I've been talking to Tarek Ali, who along with Margaret Kunstler has collected an incredible book. I mean, you've got to get a hold of this book if you really want to understand. And in defense of Julian Assange, it's really in defense of press freedom. We recorded at the University of Southern California Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism, where Bobby Prom was the engineer. We want to thank KCRW for hosting this show. And Christopher Ho is our editor there. And Joshua Scheer is the overall producer of Scheer Intelligence. And thank him for lining up our guests and setting the tone for this program. See you next week with another edition of Scheer Intelligence.
Non, rien de rien. Non, je ne regrette rien, ni le bien.